This is a Suno India production and you're listening to the Suno India Show.
With a population of 1.3 billion, India has many mouths to feed, but the country's awareness of food safety is severely lacking. In 2020, the Indian food market surged by 36%, reaching USD 633 billion approximately, which makes it the world's third largest food market. From local kirana stores to online grocery stores, everybody is selling millions of food products every day. Lots of these products claim to be healthy, boasting lots of health benefits in their product descriptions. The food manufacturers try to woo consumers with all kinds of marketing gimmicks, including ads on social media channels and using influencers to sell their products. With heaps of products and cleverly disguised marketing tactics, how can consumers verify these products' qualities and their authenticities? Do we have the necessary resources to monitor food products in a big country like India? Hi, I'm Tarun Nirvan, co-founder of Suno India and your host for this episode of Suno India Show. To get answers to all these questions, we spoke to Mr. Ramesh Bhatt. Mr. Bhatt is a scientist who worked at the Food and Drug Toxicology Research Center of the National Institute of Nutrition in Hyderabad, a pioneering research institute on nutrition and a part of the Indian Council of Medical Research. Mr. Bhatt has worked in the industry for over 3 decades. He has assisted the World Health Organization and other United Nations agencies in various aspects of food safety. He has also consulted government organizations for Asian countries on how to enhance food safety.
So to just start this interview, so first thing I would like to know and understand the different food safety standards and regulations India has and which organization make and monitor them. As far as I know and the people know, we have a Food Safety and Standard Authority of India, FSSAI, which we call. But is it the only one or do we have other also?
In India, health is in the concurrent list. So it is the joint responsibility of the center as well as the state governments, union territories, and then so on, including the local bodies. It is a center which makes most of the regulations. It is a center which supports the research activities. It's a center which has the international coordination, including activities with the WHO and the FAO, who put a lot of inputs into these. On the other hand, the implementation is left almost 100% to the state governments. The central government also maintains the central food laboratories, some of which are called appellate laboratories, and they also supervise to some extent the quality control. But ultimately, the implementation is left to the state governments and the local bodies. The infrastructure and the implementation varies from state to state. So some states are progressive. They do it very well in the food safety front. Most other states are not so progressive and the implementation is very, very poor in some of these states. So that is the responsibility shared by the center and the state. But as per WHO and the FAO, food safety is a shared responsibility. It is a shared responsibility of the government, the industry, and the consumer. It is not only that, food is grown by the farmer. So good agricultural practices, food is processed also to some extent by the farmer. Primary processing is by the farmer. So even at this level, food safety has to be practiced. That is the reason the slogan is from food safety, from farm to plate. That means the entire food chain. So participation and cooperation from all sectors at all stages is an absolute must. FSSAI is only the ultimate authority, at an apex authority at the central level. Each state governments have their own setup, their own public health laboratories, and the number of these public health laboratories at the state level vary. As I said, progressive states like Maharashtra has many laboratories, and some other states may have handful of laboratories, and the equipments and the manpower, the infrastructure in these state level laboratories also vary very much different. The center has 4 food laboratories, which are called appellate laboratories, which are well-manned, good infrastructure, most modern sophisticated equipments. Same may not be true for the state government. Now, the next level is for the implementation, we have food inspectors, both at the state level as well as at the local agency level, local administration, like the panchayats or municipalities. So even municipalities or corporations have food inspectors. The job of these food inspectors is to go and take samples.
What you said about this is a shared responsibility, and FSSAI is the highest authority who gives the proper standard mechanism and the certificate. How does this FSSAI licensing and registration system work? And we know that in the case of drugs, which are used to treat people, have a different stage of trial. Like we have seen in the COVID cases that all the drugs are coming in the market. They have a different trial stages, first stage, second stage, third stage. And after completing all the third stage, WHO approves, or Indian regulators or other different countries' regulators, they approve them. Do we have the same rules for the food products also? If we talk about the different laboratory you are talking about in the state?
No. The scenario of food and drugs are slightly different, because foods are mostly natural, or some of the foods are man-made in a sense of factory, like the processed foods. But most of the foods have a long, long history of usage, unlike the drugs. Drugs are all molecules. We have been consuming many of the foods for a long period, and they don't need any scrutiny, any examination. On the other hand, there can be newer type of foods, such as genetically modified foods, which do not have a history in the mankind. So that is a different story. Then there are fortified foods. So these are also newer man-made type of foods. All original foods, they add something, maybe some chemicals or some process is different. Manufacturing process is different and all. So the food and the drug scenarios are entirely different, and no research is needed, like the clinical trials or that type of things, as far as the food is concerned. But the main job of the FSSAI is that there are various foods these days, and technologically produced. And for these technologically produced, to keep up the shelf life, to increase the shelf life, they add a variety of food additives. And for some reasons, they add food colors. These are synthetic colors or natural colors. So for these, there are regulations based on the FAO WHO criteria. We also, in India also, mostly those type of regulations are followed. And in the United States, they have GRAS, GRAS, generally recognized as a safe list. Like that, WHO FAO also maintains a list of substances which can be added, what level they can be added, beyond which level it becomes toxic. So all these are necessary. And that is the type of job FSSAI does. Based on that, they approve. Another important aspect of the FSSAI these days is creating the awareness and what is called food labeling. So consumers, see, earlier our literacy percentage was very, very low, but now it is gradually increasing. And because of this, a lot of importance is laid to the food labeling and what type of label should be there. It should not be misleading, and what type of information which is helpful to the consumer, and above all, what is called best before use date. Say each food, manufactured food, produced food may need some shelf life. Some may last for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. That's why they have the word best before use. And then another thing is about the vegetarian and the non-vegetarian food. That is why they have the green dot concept. All this is the responsibility of the FSSAI.
I think you explained it very well, that what is the FSSAI rules, but what extent is the infrastructure of FSSAI capable of monitoring food safety? So do we have enough inspectors for factories, shops, etc., to monitor safety of food items? For instance, like during Diwali, it's well known that adulterated food is sold. And we want to understand if we only react when people fall sick, or able to identify food products that are adulterated before people consume them. Is there any mechanism or maybe the like monthly monitoring to go in different issues?
Yeah. Just for the namesake, they may do the what is called monitoring, or say milk or oil, some such foods which are likely to be adulterated more, they may monitor here and there. Seeing the size of the country and the rural-urban divide, it is almost impossible for the FSSAI to monitor it, all the foods, all the time. And they don't have that type of infrastructure. That is why they said that it is a health state's responsibility because the state governments have to look after in their areas and the local bodies also have to look after. So FSSAI doesn't have that infrastructure. But for monitoring the, in general, the standards, preparation of standards and all, FSSAI has a provision. But here again, there is a design defect in the FSSAI, manpower design defect. What is the manpower design defect? What's happening is, except the CEO of the FSSAI, who is generally in an Indian Administrative Officer's IAS, Indian Administrative Service grade officer, the rest are technical people, but CEO is not a technical man. And these officials are handpicked from the state governments or other organizations, brought to the center for 3 years, and they go back to their respective organization. With the result, there is no continuity. On the other hand, our erstwhile PFA, which was in existence since 1937, the British's period, had a very, very limited staff, the secretary, the assistant secretary, and a couple of technical staff. It used to function extremely well because they are all career people, career officers, continuity of service. Whereas FSSAI somehow decided in its own wisdom that it does not need a permanent staff, but borrow the staff from the state governments or other organizations. They come and work. After 3 years, they go back. By the time they get expertise of food safety at the central level, it is time for them to leave. So lack of this continuity is a great setback, drawback of the FSSAI. And the number of inspectors and all with them is very, 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 very minimal. And they only take samples on a very selective basis. If there is some problem and somebody raises a hue and cry on pesticide residues or something like that, then on an ad hoc basis, they undertake the survey. So it is all not a proper system. Unfortunately, most of the food samples taken are all biased, and somehow it had a good reputation of being a corrupt organization. And in order to overcome these, the international agencies like the World Health Organization and FAO have all been advocating what is called risk-based food inspection. It was originally started in Ireland and then spread to different parts of the world. So it is called risk-based inspection. Say, for example, I have a publication with one Indonesian called Dedi Fardias and also Shashi Sareen of the FAO. She was working as a regional food safety officer in Bangkok. We have published a one book called Guidelines for Risk Categorization of Food and Food Establishments Applicable to ASEAN Countries. In that, we have given guidelines to the governments, 10 ASEAN member states, that how should they do risk categorization and the establishments and how they should be monitored once in 2 months or once in 3 months based on the risk. Suppose if the food poses less risk, okay, such establishment you can inspect once in 2 years. Whereas if the food produces highest risk, for example, meat and meat products, fish, fisheries, these fishery products, these are all high risk foods. In the vegetarian sector, they can say that milk and the milk products, and to some extent oil, where the adulteration rate is very high. So we categorize into high risk foods, medium risk foods, and low risk foods. Now, these food inspectors, while selecting, they have to select this high risk food category first for intensive scrutiny, more frequent scrutiny. Medium food risks, less time it needs to be inspected. Now, low risk foods, once in 2 years or once in 3 years or even once in 5 years, if you test, it will be sufficient. So, because otherwise, it is a huge responsibility. And that is why almost all the governments of the world have accepted this risk-based food categorization. Although India accepts that, yes, this is the ideal one, implementation is very, very poor. They have not done that. So, that is my main complaint against the FSSAI in not implementing the risk-based food inspection. I will put it very bluntly that most of the state government food inspectors had somehow got the bad reputation that it's a corrupt organization. The person who pays money is let off. The person who's straightforward is harassed. So that is why we have been advocating the risk-based inspection. See, food inspectors are given a target by their bosses, say, collect so many foods. But they never tell from which places you collect, whom you collect. So risk-based food inspection has to be followed by the food inspector. He doesn't follow that. They will say, okay, Deepali time. Okay, large quantity of sweet is prepared. So let us go and inspect that. Something like that they do. But yes, Deepali time, consumption is more. Sweets, especially Koa-based sweets, are all getting spoiled very quickly. Yes, you need more inspection. But There should be a set pattern of these things. But that is not being done. Because unless the food inspector is educated, he himself is trained in risk-based inspection, he will not be able to execute it. See, what I have been doing between 2003 and 2015 is in these ASEAN countries, we used to train the government authorities, selected food inspectors, on risk-based food inspection. Each country, like Philippines or Thailand or Cambodia or Laos, we used to conduct this very frequently, a risk-based food inspection teaching program. So in India, food inspectors have never been taught about this. So they should be taught, and then only we can improve the scenario and minimize the extent of corruption.
So what you mentioned just now, that we don't have the risk-based assessment system, and especially India, like comparing to the other countries. So what other difference between USA, Europe and India we have in terms of the food safety, and how seriously do our governments and other organizations apply them or force manufacturers to follow them?
In other countries, ASEAN countries or the Western countries, they give more importance to GAP. There's a good practices. These good practices may be good agricultural practice, good manufacturing practice, and another system called HACCP, Hazard Analysis Critical Control Point Approach. These are all good veterinary practices and so on. So these good practices helps to a large extent in preventing the contamination, adulteration or toxic formation. So such a insistence on these good practices is also a lacuna in India. Say, for example, in the good agricultural practices, they say site selection, variety selection, fertilizer application selection, pesticide application procedures, type of pesticides, how post-harvest condition should be, these are all covered. So once that is there, then there is a inspection of all the good agricultural practices and certification is issued, and it is an assurance that the quality of the food produced is very good. It is because of this reason they are able to export foods. These days, foods travel thousands and thousands of miles across the world. Now, India is not exporting food to that quality, that extent, except maybe basmati rice or some such products. But otherwise, prepared foods, they don't export that much. Even now, the export has increased, but that is mostly to serve the ethnic Indians. That is the NRIs who are abroad. They prefer Indian products, prepared foods and all. So only that. So for that, Export Inspection Council of the Government of India does specify that they have to follow this good agricultural practices, good manufacturing practices, HACCP and all. Otherwise, export certificate is not given. And also, the importers are very, very strict about it. Supermarket chains of the West or the FDA, Food and Drug Administration of the United States, they're all very, very particular. Only they are subjected to these type of scrutiny of the GMP, GAP, HACCP, good veterinary practices and so on. So, which is partly monitored by the Ministry of Commerce under the Export Inspection Scheme. So, that's the one. So this is the one lacuna, one difference which we have between India and other either developed or developing countries like the ASEAN countries. ASEAN countries gives much more importance for food safety than India. Maybe it is because of their travel and tourism sector booming, and a lot of international travelers used to visit countries like Thailand and then Cambodia. So they used to give a lot of importance for food safety. I had also worked on street foods, and I had written a world monograph on street foods published by the Karger in Basel, Switzerland, in which we have reviewed the scenario in almost all parts of the globe on the street foods. But Thailand has been the pioneer in promoting street foods for tourism, and in India, it is quite the opposite. Foreigners shun street foods in India because of its food safety. On the other hand, they patronize street foods in Thailand and Cambodia and Laos and other Southeast Asian countries. So basically, this has been my main work.
So now, when we are talking about the export item, so what happens in case of imported products which are already approved from their manufacturing country? Like suppose something is coming from the USA and which is already approved, all the regulation authority from the USA, do they need to apply to get FSSAI license in India again, or they can just start selling?
No, they have to. You know, one thing is, suppose food is accepted in the ESC, they export to India. How much time it takes? Now, what happens during this transit? So that is a big question. And during this period, see, for example, one of my earliest specializations was mycotoxins. In mycotoxins, I worked on aflatoxins, that is molds producing toxins. So if the food is not stored properly, whether it is the basic products like maize or the our Indian spices like chilies or pepper, which are all highly contaminated by these molds. Once these molds invade, during the process of transit, either in the ship hold or even in the aircraft flying, the moisture percentage increases and these molds proliferate and more toxins is formed. And although in a country of produce, it might be safe, during transit, there are chances of contamination. For example, Iranians used to export pistachio to Europe, EU, and they had a dispute. EU people were telling that they were having aflatoxins in Iranian pistachios, and Iran was telling that our export inspection was very clear that the produce was free from aflatoxins. Then I was asked to arbitrate, so I went to Iran twice and finally tried to see what is the problem. Then I found this problem. That is, Iran might have produced excellent pistachios because it's a fairly dry country. And they do not have direct access to the European markets. It used to go to via Dubai. Now, in this process, either in the shipping or while storage in Dubai, contamination had come and they used to have the problem. Similarly, I once investigated products from India, groundnuts, exported to Australia and other countries. It was all via through Singapore. And in the Indian ports itself, after the export inspection, it was lying for some time and some took place. And this aflatoxin has formed. And then even the ship hold, it can happen like that. And this is how in the international food export-import business, these type of problems can occur.
You were talking about that it's kind of impossible for the FSSAI to go and regulate each and every district or state or small cities in a different state and to go check each food product. But in the last few years, we have seen a boom of online grocery stores. Yes, and they sell all kinds of products. We all are getting ads for the lots of products from frozen foods to multivitamins, tablets and gummies. So do we have any safety regulation for these kind of online stores about what they can or cannot sell in India or anywhere in the world?
Not that I'm aware of. There should be, because online store or offline store, it's everything is the same. That is, the food safety is the same. So there cannot be a separate criteria for that. Food, when it is received by the consumer, must be safe. It must be conformed to the quality. And there is no separate mechanism for this on, because these are all coming up only recently, especially the COVID scenario, post-COVID scenario, and this online business has tremendously increased. And I don't think that our health infrastructure, that the food inspection infrastructure has gone to that extent.
I used to get lots of these kind of ads, and I'm always worried that what they are selling in names of multivitamins or what they are claiming also that they can treat all kinds of disease. So we don't know that if it's true or not. My next question is related to that. Is when a consumer wants to buy something, what kind of things they should look on a product when they buy that? Is it a safe, or we know there is a FSSAI mark in all the products, but is there any other significant things we should all be look out?
First, they should read the label properly and whether everything is in order. So, this labeling requirements is fairly stringent in India because to make the legislation or to prescribe is very, very easy. How much it is followed, is implemented, is very, very difficult. So, the consumer has to depend entirely on the food labeling process. And there again, he can read, see what they do is to the extent possible, the smallest possible print they will put it. So, people may not have patience or these things to read. Normally, what the consumer reads is that, best before date, or what they call date of expiry. Expiry, they write only best before, whether it is before the date or not. So that type of things the consumers can see, and that's right. But other things need a level. Say, for example, if the food becomes rancid, that means suppose fatty foods, they become rancid. Some type of a smell is produced. For the first time in the world, we have described a foodborne disease outbreak in Hyderabad in the Charminar area due to the consumption of rancid biscuits by children. This is about 15-20 years ago. 3 years ago, in the United States, in a prison facility, they found again the same type of rancid stuffs and causing the foodborne disease. So, this type of rancidity and all is also a serious problem, but consumer has no mechanism to test it. And he just see the taste, and if the taste is not good, then he will discard it. That's all.
Just to follow up to this question, do we have any compensation mechanism in India apart from to consumer court in case of any harm is caused to any individual by any product?
Very, very little. Nobody follows it up. Nobody proves it. But people do go to the food inspectors, do inspect and send it to their public health laboratories, food laboratories, analyze. There are well-laid rules for that. It has to be analyzed within 40 days and all that type of these things. And if found adulterated, the manufacturer or the seller is taken to the court. Court proceedings takes place. But again, typical problem with Indian courts. They are extremely slow. A brilliant lawyer taking lots of money can bail the person out by finding one or the other reason, and the consumer cannot do and follow it up all, not even the food inspectors. In fact, that is one of the greatest drawbacks in India. 50% of the time of the food inspector is spent in courts. Litigations are pending. He goes to the court and case is adjourned, he comes back. So his time is lost. Almost half day or three fourths of the day is lost. So this is another, that is taking them to the court, and time is wasted, money is also wasted, and victims do not get the justice.
Please rate our podcast and leave a comment if you like it. Underreported and underrepresented stories can become mainstream only if it reaches more people. So please support us by visiting our contributing page on our website, sunoindia.in, or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.